This is the More Than Right podcast, and I'm your host, Steve Lopez.
As European populations revolt against the World Economic Forum's climate change scam, one of America's deep thinkers has developed a new approach for convincing our more stubborn citizens that perpetually changing climate is altering in transformative ways which modify, amend, and refashion our understanding of weather-altering alterations. Something calling itself the Environmental Media Association declared actress Laura Dern the winner of its ongoing commitment award for her work ginning up hysteria against the natural changes in weather, or climate change. However, with it looking more and more like Donald Trump will re-enter the White House in 2024, environmental Cassandras have decided to offer an olive branch to MAGA in the hope of bringing Donald Trump into the climate change family. Dern told fellow eco-alarmists to stop talking down to their inferiors. Such condescension, she said, is clearly not working. Activists, she insisted, need to disguise their fuming contempt if they are to control the lives of lesser beings. Quote, polling tells us that for conservative voters, most congressional elections in this country come down to a simple choice. The Republican was a jerk, the Democrat was an elitist, and at least the jerk never made me feel dumb. This is the difference between saving America and scolding it. We need to find a new language, one that works not just in Los Angeles at fundraisers, but in Iowa and Oklahoma and West Virginia, unquote. Being nice to dumb Americans, you see, will help ignorant plebeians reject jerk Republicans in favor of virtuous Democrat elitists, secure in their self-importance. Our superiors believe CO2, which allows plant life on Earth to make the oxygen we breathe, will destroy the planet if we don't surrender our freedoms to unelected international climate bureaucrats. You see, we're too dumb to govern ourselves. By thinly masquerading her dripping contempt as sweet words of kindness to Neanderthals, Dern believes this will open the doors to the hearts and minds of inferiors in such far-flung places as Des Moines, Oklahoma City, and Wheeling. Or, at least that's what Dern thinks. But much like evil, stupidity lacks self-awareness. In her speech to fellow eco-fanatics, Dern sounded like a mad scientist from some low-budget sci-fi film, or the Wuhan Institute of Virology. Quote, "These people, our fellow Americans, are actively resisting the work we're asking them to do, work that will save their farms and rivers and towns. I propose it's because they've been told we're crazy. The news they watch has convinced them that we love open borders, caravans of criminals, smash and grab, cancel culture, and late-term abortions on demand," unquote. "You shall know them by their fruits," says the New Testament. If climate change skepticism prevails among provincials in Trumplandia, it just might spring from the other crazy ideas that prevail among the leftist cult celebrating Laura Dern's devotion to the irrational climate conspiracy theory. On the first Earth Day in 1970, environmental alarmist and Harvard University biologist George Wald gave civilization 15 to 30 years of existence unless draconian environmental measures were enacted, which meant diminishing American freedom and standard of living. Back then, most environmental disaster scenarios concerned global cooling. This neo-ice age theory was even embraced by celebrity astronomer Carl Sagan. Going hand in hand with environmental disaster theories were notions of overpopulation catastrophes. North Texas State University professor Peter Gunter predicted global famine would devastate much of our world by the year 2000. Father of Earth Day, Stanford University's Paul Ehrlich, predicted that by the 1980s, overpopulation would strain dwindling food supplies and lead to the starvation of, quote, at least 100 to 200 million people per year, unquote. Oh, it was also predicted that the world's oil reserves would exhaust by that same year, 2000. On the other hand, environmental doomsayer Greta Thunberg predicted back in 2018 that if we failed to stop using fossil fuels, the world would end by 2023. Happy New Year, it's 2024. Americans have heard a lot of blockbuster science fiction movie plots posing as real scientific findings by people with PhDs attached to their names. Lest we forget the scientific musings offered during the COVID pandemic, from the effectiveness of useless vaccines to pointless mask mandates and the censoring of contrary scientific findings, has rendered average Americans immune to the pronouncements of credentialed experts and the squawking of parroting celebrities. Americans are no longer cowed by the tyranny of experts, in politics or science. In fact, these so-called experts have proven to be as unreliable, hysterical, and insufferable as Hollywood entertainers. No amount of condescending sweet talk from them will regain trust among the great unwashed, the intended victims that Dern says are actively resisting the work we're asking them to do. She fails to understand the central cause for all that resistance. Eco-fascists aren't asking us to join them in tilting at windmills. They're demanding it. And resisting their invitation is foolishly mistaken for stupidity. So let's be clear. Those resisting today's eco-hysteria, they're the smart ones. Back in 2018, then-President Donald Trump withdrew U.S. funding from the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees, or UNRWA. He used this defunding to pressure Palestinian leaders to negotiate a peace deal with Israel. This did not go well with some. A commentary appearing on the Liberal Brookings Institution website noted, quote, "Nowhere are the UNRWA cuts more acute than in the Gaza Strip, where about 2 million souls inhabit a tiny area twice the size of Washington, D.C., that few can gain permission to leave. There, UNRWA provides services to 1.3 million people, spending about 40% of its overall budget," unquote. During the 2020 presidential campaign, CBN News reported on candidate Joe Biden's promise to change President Trump's UNRWA defunding policy.
In 2018, the Trump administration ended funding to UNRWA, the UN Relief and Works Agency for Palestinian Refugees.
Over a period of 2.5 years, he got information to show that the UNRWA was actually a terrorist advocate, and he did what needed to be done and cut them off. UNRWA is making every sign that they expected Biden to reverse that process.
David Bedeen has investigated UNRWA for 2 decades.
The United Nations Relief and Works Agency is a terror advocate openly, without any, they don't mince words about it. They, with military training in their schools, with school books which praise those who murder Jews, with school books which get children in the mornings that start their day with singing songs about wiping out the state of Israel. This is not appropriate for a United Nations agency.
More than 300,000 young Palestinians attend these schools in the West Bank, Gaza, and Jerusalem. Bedeen asked Vice President Biden about UNRWA in 2016. Biden's written response said in part, "While there is still work to be done, Palestinian government has made significant progress in reducing inflammatory rhetoric and revising official textbooks."
Now, I want to be very fair about this. If UNRWA had shown signs that they were having a new curriculum, listening to feedback, you'd have to be fair about it. But they're not. And UNRWA is continuing to teach the theme, right of return by force of arms, as their theme.
And just as promised, Biden reinstated U.S. funding for UNRWA, as the BBC reported in April of 2021. Quote, Secretary of State Antony Blinken said the U.S. plans included $75 million in economic and development assistance in the West Bank and Gaza, $10 million for peace-building programs through the U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, and $150 million in humanitarian assistance for the UN Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees, UNWAR, unquote. With all this in mind, it was revealed this week that at least 13 UNWAR relief workers joined Islamic terror group Hamas in last October's massacre and kidnapping of innocent Israeli and American citizens in the Jewish state. It underscored the anti-Israel, pro-Islamic terror sympathies of the United Nations, as well as the organization's irrational demand for a unilateral Israeli ceasefire in its nearly four-month war with genocidal Hamas terrorists in the Gaza Strip. The U.S. news media has given the story scant coverage, but Israeli government spokesman Ilan Levy used social media to give a detailed account of the events that unfolded last October 7th.
UN staff were among the perpetrators of the October 7 massacre. UN staff, their salaries paid for with international taxpayer money, were involved in the barbaric, premeditated atrocities and abductions. At least 13 UNRWA employees are implicated in the massacre. 10 Hamas operatives, 2 Palestinian Islamic Jihad, and 1 unaffiliated. Of those, 6 UNRWA employees infiltrated Israel in the attack, 5 were Hamas, 1 unaffiliated. 4 UNRWA employees were involved in abducting Israelis, including 2 of those who infiltrated Israeli territory. Another 3 UNRWA employees, all Hamas, were summoned via text message to arrive at an assembly point on the night of October 6th and directed to equip themselves with weapons. At least 1 UNRWA employee supplied the Hamas invasion with logistical support. Another was directed to establish an operations room on October 8th.
Even before the Hamas massacre last October, Israel had been contending with Hamas rocket attacks launched from Gaza schools for years. The international community, fueled by sympathetic news reports, condemned Israeli counterstrikes that damaged Palestinian schools, killing and wounding civilians. But Israeli spokesman Levy described how UNWAR teachers, who are paid with U.S. taxpayer funds and instill Jew hatred in Palestinian children, helped Hamas in moving Jewish and American hostages.
At least 2 Israeli survivors of Hamas captivity have testified that they were held in the homes of UNRWA teachers. One of them was moved between hideouts through UNRWA facilities. When that report first surfaced, UNRWA accused the journalist of spreading misinformation and vowed to investigate the incident. That was on December 1st, nearly 2 months ago. Needless to say, UNRWA has not followed up on that promise.
Notice how the United Nations accused the Israeli journalist of engaging in disinformation for reporting the truth about UN staff helping Hamas commit mass murder, in which the beheading of infants occurred. The United Nations Human Rights Council is currently working to produce speech guidelines to govern online discourse. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres addressed his vision for establishing a global censorship regime that will apply to views in opposition to official government corporate narratives.
The lightning fast spread of misinformation, the manipulation of people's behavior, we can only address these challenges united by establishing clear rules to safeguard human rights and fundamental freedoms, by regaining control over our data, by countering disinformation and hate speech, and by connecting everyone to the Internet by 2030. And my recent report on our common agenda proposes a global digital compact aimed at bringing governments, the private sector, and civil society together in support of this vision.
Until Elon Musk purchased Twitter, most Americans were unaware such censorship guidelines already existed across many social media platforms. The Twitter Files, an expose of Twitter's past censorship wrongs, revealed how conservative voices were censored, how information countering government lies about COVID vaccine effectiveness and the existence of successful and cheap treatments were removed from the public view, It also came to light that an alarming number of former FBI personnel served in censorship roles within Twitter. UN Secretary General Guterres would have preferred a global censorship regime was in place to declare as disinformation the UN's participation in genocidal murder. The Anwar revelations forced President Biden to emulate predecessor Trump by withdrawing U.S. taxpayer support for Islamic terrorism against Israel and American citizens. You might be wondering what legal actions await UN staff members who participated in the massacre of Jews last October. Israeli spokesman Ilan Levy answers that as well.
UNRWA has responded by threatening criminal prosecution against the suspects. Now, that response raises more questions than answers. In what jurisdiction, for example, does UNRWA intend to prosecute these Hamas and Islamic Jihad members? Gaza? Does it plan to hand them over to the local authorities, Hamas? Or will it extradite them to Israel? We view this as nothing more than a transparent stunt to try to continue avoiding responsibility.
Whatever legal jurisdiction or venue the murderers of Anwar find themselves, there's little doubt it will be a friendly one. The anti-Semitic United Nations wouldn't have it any other way. In the days following the October 7th Anwar Hamas massacre, Israel's UN ambassador, Gilad Erdan, addressed the United Nations Security Council.
When my grandfather Chaim and his children were sent to Auschwitz, the world stayed silent. When his babies were sent to the gas chambers, the world stayed silent. When their bodies were burned along millions of other Jewish children, the world was silent. Today, after innocent Jewish babies were burned alive, this council is still silent. The anti-Semites have been empowered. They now know that slaughtering Jews in their beds is met with silence. They have been so galvanized by these organizations in action that they cannot wait to butcher Jews themselves. Israel has made its choice. We were attacked by the Hamas Nazis. We were shown that genocidal Jew hatred did not die with Hitler. It bubbled and grew until it invaded our homeland. But the difference between 1939 and today is that today Jews have a strong state and a powerful military. We are not defenseless. We are lions of Judah. And we will defend ourselves against those that seek to annihilate us.
We understand the reason behind the Security Council's silence, considering what we now know. The United Nations, which the U.S. brought into the world after the Second World War, has become a promoter of the very murderous genocidal hatred the civilized world destroyed in 1945. The problem with the UN is that it extends membership to nations who do not share Western values. Recall that Hitler's regime rejected Judeo-Christian values in favor of an occultic superstitious barbarism whose chief tenet was the superiority of mythical Aryans he believed Germans descended from. Speaking of Nazis and radical Islam, in a 2016 article appearing in the journal Contemporary European History, released through Cambridge University Press, the article reads in part, quote, "Since the early 2000s, there has been an increasing amount of research on the connections between the Nazi regime and the Arab world, largely spurred by scholars of Germany. One of the key contributions of this scholarship has been the argument that historic links between National Socialism and Islam, in particular, the connection between National Socialist racial ideology and contemporary anti-Semitism in the Middle East persisted into the post-war period and crucially shaped Middle Eastern politics and policies. There is a direct line of continuity between National Socialism, the Muslim Brotherhood, and the rise of Al-Qaeda," unquote. In 1945, Adolf Hitler died in a Berlin bunker, a cyanide tablet in one hand and a Walther PPK pistol in the other. But his spirit lives on at the United Nations, whose staff joined with Hamas and Hezbollah in continuing the German dictator's final solution. 80 years after Hitler's lifeless body was burned in a rubble-strewn ditch, the flames of his hate burn brightly at a corrupt world organization funded by U.S. tax dollars. That concludes this edition of the More Than Right podcast. If you feel so inclined, please like and subscribe to the podcast. Until next time, this is Steve Lopez.